I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Making stuff is hard, especially in the entertainment world, where big egos, bigger budgets, and just plain bad luck can make things go horribly wrong. And we're going behind the scenes of these disastrous, never-ending, and often dangerous productions to find out why it was a shit show.
Hello, friends. This is It Was a Shit Show. I'm Ian, joined by Clint.
Hello.
And Ray.
Hello.
And it's Halloween season, so of course we have to have our usual spooky time guest, Sequoia.
Ooh. I've returned.
Sequoia, are you here? Are you with us?
Yeah, we summoned you.
We summoned her all the way from New York City.
She's back.
Once every Halloween, she is summoned to the pod.
She's awakened.
Yeah, here I am.
I love it. So, that was so good.
My brother takes umbrage with the fact that a lot of people call it spooky season, like Halloween. It's like, it's just Halloween. Just call it Halloween season. He's like, so he just keeps making fun of people. He's like, well, it's spooky season. I just laugh at that. It's like, people can call it spooky season, but
spooky season,
I get it
great.
Though. You know what? I'm just realizing, yeah, that like my brother does listen to the podcast, so shout out to my brother.
Like, oh shit. All that time you've been talking crap on him.
I never talk crap about my brothers.
Halloween is the holiday. Spooky season is the season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
Take that. Clint's brother.
He's going to come at me now. He's like, what are you doing?
So, I picked a random film for us this year, didn't I?
Yeah. Yeah, you did. This is way out of left field. I had no idea. I was like, what? Okay.
It was very random, but I was so excited because I remember when this movie came out and I was just like, I was so jazzed. Like everything about the idea of this movie, I was like, yes, Heath Ledger, sold. Spooky, sold. Fairy tales, sold. Terry Gilliam, sold. Like I was all about this movie.
Yeah, I remember seeing the trailers for this movie and being like, okay, yeah, I'm interested. But I never saw it. And then until Ian gave me the homework, I'm like, oh, okay.
Oh, so you haven't seen it.
First time?
This is the first time for me, so I watched it and... Oh boy.
Yeah.
You have thoughts.
I had also not seen it before, Clint. And I don't, you guys got me into some kind of a clusterfuck. Here's the thing. I feel like what you've done to me personally is just like a slow shift down every time. Like we were like Poltergeist, and then we were like The Invasion, and then we were like The Brothers Grimm, and I'm like, what are we even going to do next? You're going to get worse than this one?
Oh, we're going to jump into the Leprechaun movies and Trolls.
Yes.
Hell yeah.
I mean, but those movies are the ones that are like, they're so bad, they're good.
Right.
This movie is just like unfortunate.
Yes. Yeah.
You know?
That's a very good way to put it. Yeah.
Well, so I don't really have a particular reason for choosing it, but when we talk scary stories, who better than the guys that practically invented fairy tales? And it's true. They were originally their versions of the fairy tales are pretty fucked up.
Yeah.
Kind of twisted.
Oh, speaking of which, I have a Clint's closet today.
Yeah, because I had nothing. I had shit. So, I know. I was like, so when Ray told me, she was like, hey, I got something for Clint's closet, but good, because I got nothing. So this is perfect.
So I went into my collection and grabbed my Complete Grimm's Fairy Tales, this like tome. It's very like beautiful leather-bound giant book of gold. Fairy tales.
Yeah, the gold leaves.
Gold leaves on the outside.
Gold, like it looks kind of like a Bible, you know, like those fancy old Bibles.
Same caliber of stories, I mean, as far as the reality goes, right?
There's like a post-it note in here. What the hell is that about? Why did you put a random post-it note in my book?
New Orleans, North and West.
Oh my God, is this a mystery? Are you sending me on a scavenger hunt?
Yeah, let it begin.
Did you get like high one night? I was like, this is going to be fucking awesome.
I have no idea.
This is going to freak her out.
Interesting.
So that's a big book. That's like if you like lay it on the desk, it's just going to go ta-koom.
But it's also like,
it is a
tome. Like the index is like 47 pages.
Yeah, so this is the thing that was really surprising to me. After this movie, we were talking about Grimm's Fairy Tales and like which... Like, oh,
which
like the Princess and the Pea, is that theirs? Like, because there were a lot of different like kind of mashups of fairy tales in this movie and we weren't sure which ones were Grimm's. And I'm like, well, let me go consult the book. The index of this book has 215 entries.
Wow.
What?
There are. Yeah, hold on. Let me just confirm.
I love that.
It is like five pages. 211. There are 211 Grimm's fairy tales, you guys.
That's amazing. And we keep recycling the same ones.
That's so many.
But I love how Jenny Ray was like, I'm going to consult the book instead of being like, I'm going to check the internet. Like, yeah.
Internet, I don't know her. Because like in my brain, I'm like, oh yeah, they wrote 10 fairy tales. No, they wrote an absolute shit ton of fairy tales.
Yeah.
Take that, Stephen King. I don't know. How many
whether or not any of those, we just remember the ones that Disney made.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, with that. Today, let's talk The Brothers Grimm.
He actually came into the meeting saying he wanted to play Will, and I said, I don't know that. And I then spent the whole evening with him talking him out of playing Will. By the end of the evening, he left and said, well, whichever part you want me to play, I'm in. Heath came around the next morning and I said, okay, which part do you want to play, Heath? He said, oh, I'd like to play Jake. And I said, what? Right, okay, well, you got it. And the reason I liked it was we were basically casting against type. And I love doing that. And it's dangerous, and you can fall flat on your face. But, okay, let's do it. Let's just turn it around. And it's been brilliant.
Okay, so we've already done Clint's closet in a way. Well, not Clint's, Ray's closet.
Ray's rummage sale.
Ray's rummage sale. When we talk about shit show productions, no man is better at knowing exactly what that means than Terry Gilliam. If you don't know who he is, he was the one American inside of Monty Python. He did all the animation interludes. And he isn't on screen as much as the others. He's like in Holy Grail, he's the
Patsy.
He's Patsy,
yeah.
The servant, and the bridge keeper guy. He co-directed Monty Python and the Holy Grail with Terry Jones. Then he started his own solo film career. Time Bandits, Brazil, The Adventures of Baron Munchausen, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. So all of those at this time, these were all the movies he had made up to that point.
He did Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
All of which were some form of a shit show. And definitely episodes for another time.
Right. Like, and then that wild to think that like, oh, the same guy that directed, that co-directed Monty Python and the Holy Grail did 12 Monkeys?
Yeah. It's like,
it's like, what? You wouldn't even put those two together.
Yeah. No, right? He also very famously failed making The Man Who Killed Don Quixote, which was canceled 6 days into filming. The documentary Lost in La Mancha is about the failure. Super fascinating.
So are we going to do an episode on all those movies or just a Terry Gilliam episode that's like 4 hours long?
That might be a good idea. So again, Terry Gilliam knows his shit shows.
I mean, I'm just going to advocate for myself and say, let's please do these because I have wanted to watch more Terry Gilliam movies and I just haven't. And so please assign these to me so I can have an excuse to watch them.
Yeah, for some of them, like, I've never seen Brazil. Right. But, and it's one that people always kind of talk about. But Brazil, Baron Munchausen, and 12 Monkeys are absolutely shit shows. Okay. So I figured, Jenny Ray, you're going to be our Terry Gilliam today because he has 1,000 quotes and he is a very candid person.
And as we've established, I'm very good at reading.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Thanks for just giving me, two? Yeah. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Okay. So, but we're going to start off with a quote because I feel like it kind of sums up what we're about to go through.
Usually my battles are when I finish a film, but this one got off to some very bad beginnings.
Okay. The Brothers Grimm. The original script was a spec script by Aaron Kruger.
And what is a spec script? I don't know what that is.
A spec script is basically an original idea. It's just like completely new. Like
probably has nothing to do with.
Also, no one has paid you to write this thing. You are writing it on speculation that you can then go and sell it.
So, like, if I'm just like in my house, like just like and I'm just writing a script, that would be a spec script for me.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. All right. And I have got so many of those that have started and everything. Yeah.
This is like not a thing that happens anymore. It was huge. Like in the 90s, there was like this gold rush.
'80s and '90s
of spec scripts where like you could be like. You could be like some kid in Hollywood and you like wrote a script and you could sell it, you know, and like get a movie made. And now that's just like doesn't happen.
Like you're a waiter working as a waiter and then like writing scripts on the side and you see like some Hollywood big shot like come into your restaurant.
I mean, literally, like, that's the story of Romancing the Stone, right?
Yeah. 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 Oh, okay.
So there you go. That's Romancing the Stone. But I mean, it's everything from Goonies to Star Wars, like the original Star Wars. It's just someone just came up with it and it was never commissioned. Like there are. The movies we see today are all either sequels or based on properties. Even Oppenheimer is based off of a book.
Oh, I see.
Right? Like, mm-hmm. So these, that's what we always think about the 80s and 90s. It's just the shit that nobody would have thought up of, whether it's Back to the Future.
That's why those movies are so goddamn awesome.
Yeah, because they're just completely original and crazy. Yeah. So when that happens nowadays, it's kind of like a big thing. Like, oh my gosh, I would have never thought about this.
An original idea?
What? Yeah.
Who would have thought?
Who would have thought? Yeah.
So Aaron Kruger, he kind of got his big start with a spec script, one of my favorite movies ever, Arlington Road.
Oh.
And then he also did Scream 3. Good level, bad level?
Scream 3 got fucked with a lot. but overall, it's an okay Scream.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say it's like the lower tier of Scream.
Of Scream,
movies.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, then he also did Reindeer Games, which is terrible. And then he did The Ring.
Okay.
Oh.
And then he did Ring 2. So that's the the wave
lows, ups,
we're going on.
But can it be a spec script if it's it can't be a, so his Ring script would not be considered a spec script, right?
No, because he was adapting
one. We're just talking about him as a writer. Okay. Yeah, gotcha.
So he sold The Brothers Grimm to MGM in February of 2001. And this was always the type of movie it was supposed to be. It was never like a biopic of the Grimm brothers or anything that.
Which sounds bleak and boring, if I'm being right. honest.
Yeah. Wait a second. This isn't a biopic?
Yeah.
This didn't happen?
It could have fooled me. It was so realistic.
So no director gets attached to it until October of 2002. And this was actually with Terry Gilliam. This was 4 years since Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas and 2 years since The Man Who Killed Don Quixote failed. Mm. So he hasn't had anything to do and he needed a job kind of. So as Time Magazine said at the time, he's as famous for the movies he hasn't finished as for the ones he has.
That's not a good thing to be known for.
This is Terry Gilliam on that his history of issues making movies.
I think I've got a certain talent, and I don't know how to defend it, so I end up defending it more vociferously than it may need, but I always feel under threat. It's a basic inbuilt paranoia. When people start interfering, I go a little bit crazy.
That sounds like a quote from me. Yeah. But I'm really glad that you gave this quote to her because I saw that vociferously, and I'm like, what the hell is that word?
That's exactly right. That's why she was given the character.
Again, reading skills. No, that's like, I totally understand that, though. You're just like, I am smart and talented, damn it. And then people start being like, well, but hang on.
Yeah, exactly.
And then people over here in the corner are like, Don Quixote.
Yeah. That's hard, too. And they can point to, like, all of your failures and be like, see, he can't be trusted to finish a movie. Like, we have to, us executives have to come in and meddle all the time.
Yeah. Well, we'll get to that. Gilliam was debating doing Grimm or another film called Tidelands, a film he adapted, a book with the same name, and he adapted it with Tony Grissoni, who also helped write Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. So he's deciding between the two of them, and Gilliam took the job, even though, as he said, he didn't like the script, but he needed a job.
Okay.
And I like his friend's name, though. Tony what? Tony
Grissoni.
Tony Grissoni.
Hey, Tony Grissoni.
I like that a lot.
Yeah, that's not a great way to start off.
Well, okay. So, I mean, you think about, there's a lot of people that do movies. He's like, one for me, one for you kind of thing. Like, yeah. I'll make this ridiculous. The one I always think about is Peter Berg wanted to make Lone Survivor. I think that's what it was. The movie with Mark Wahlberg, like the war movie.
Yeah.
Anyway, he wanted to make that, but whatever company was like, well, if you make Battleship for us, like, we'll give you the money to make Lone Survivor. And so he was like, fine. And so it's like, it's just a job. It's just like, fuck it, I'll do this so I can get the money to make the other movie I really want to make.
So he's like, okay, I'll do the Brothers Grimm so that I can make Tidelands, which is more what I want to make. Okay.
Exactly. So Gilliam and Grissoni did a rewrite on the script. However, they are not credited as doing so. Multiple sites say that they were denied credit during arbitration by the Writers Guild, but I can't find a source for that, so I don't know.
It's like,
But he mentions it several times about how he rewrote it to a place that he was more comfortable with.
I just want to know who wrote that opening scene, because that person needs a big old slap in the face.
Yeah,
I agree.
I started watching this with Lisa, and like it's such a weird scene, and it just ends.
Yeah.
And Lisa and I were watching, and she's like, is there something wrong with the screen?
Did it skip?
Like, did it skip? I'm like, I don't think it did. So we went back and watched it again. I was like, look, it's not a scratched DVD, so it's not going to skip every single time. Like, this is like streaming, like, and it did it again. I'm like, this is weird.
Like, someone just like lopped off some stuff. Like, that feels like a deleted scene moment.
Yeah.
As well as being that the writing was not that great.
Yeah. There was probably a scene where the sister was like, and like died.
Yeah.
And then
they
were like, hey, maybe that's like too dark for the movie. Just sort of cut that bit out.
Yeah, that's true, because
fully
you don't,
dies.
You don't, we don't, we're not really given the answer of whether she died or not, right?
Well, the other thing, yeah,
because
the other thing,
because
that's really
they just
weird
kind
about
of allude to it, because they just start getting to a fight and then it hard cuts out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
And then later when they're older, you're like, oh, well, he keeps like bringing it up and like about the magic bean. So you assume that she died and that he blames his brother for it.
That drove me crazy, because there was the first, later on when they're actually like fighting him, going, it's like the beans all over again. That scene made sense. Like, that was a good callback to that moment. But the other time where they get money and he just goes, here, do you want your cut? Or do you want magic beans? It was like, Jesus Christ.
God,
you do this every job? You fucking dick.
A constant reminder of like, remember how you killed our sister?
Yeah.
He does it every time they get any money or every time they see any beans. Any beans.
Look, he's still following you. How much longer do you think he's going to be doing this if you keep bringing up the fact that he killed your sister?
Yeah.
Heath Ledger's like, I can never order beans for dinner. Like, I can't ever like say the word beans or talk about
no,
beans.
Every time they sit down to eat, he'll have the beans.
Big side of beans.
Okay. So in February of 2003, the film is in talks with Matt Damon, Heath Ledger, Jonathan Pryce, and Robin Williams.
Oh.
Okay.
So the financing of the film was entirely based on if Damon would sign on or not. So he just did Born Identity, and it was a much bigger hit than anybody expected it could be. And he was also, he also has an Oscar. So he's like, he was a big deal for them to get. And with him joining, the budget increased.
Right.
They actually provided more funding. Johnny Depp was Gilliam's first choice for Will.
Okay.
But MGM didn't think he was a big enough star.
What?
So
was this after Sleepy Hollow?
This is 2003. So this is
right before Black Pearl.
Yes. Yeah. The first Pirates movie hadn't come out yet.
Okay.
Right.
He was currently like they were in post on it. But so nobody knew that was going to be huge.
But he'd fucking done Edward Scissorhands and Sleepy Hollow and.
Yeah. But you could argue that those movies were more the idea than Johnny Depp. So sure. Whatever.
But still, he's studios, like, he was like the king of spooky movies.
Yeah. So
because it's spooky season.
Because it's spooky season.
I genuinely can't imagine him in that role, though.
Like,
I'm trying to picture it, and it doesn't work.
Yeah, it's too straight-laced, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If it's a role where he doesn't have to do something wacky with his hands or his eyes, like, he's not going to do it.
Yeah.
His eyes? Johnny Depp, known crazy eye actor.
You've seen Willy Wonka or Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, right?
Yeah. You mean, like, the contact lens situation.
Yeah, well, he's just always playing a weirdo.
Yeah.
So they were aiming for a fall 2004 release date. So in March of... 2003, in the middle of pre-production, sets are designed. They're scouting locations in the Czech Republic.
Ooh.
Then what happens?
A rainstorm washes out and destroys their sets.
Oh my God, that same flood in Prague that wiped out LXG sets?
Well remembered, but no.
He set us up. Maybe.
Sequoia, guess?
But no,
guess?
I don't have a guess. I do not have a guess. A fire! No.
Okay. MGM pulls all funding.
What?
They completely back out in making the movie.
So it's like a reverse flood.
Yeah.
Reverse flood. In a reverse flood decision, we decided to pull all of your funding.
The classic reverse flood.
Yeah. That's what we'll call it from now on. It's like anytime you run out of money, it's a reverse flood over here.
They didn't give a reason. They were just like, nope.
No, so I mean, it could have been a thousand things. Maybe MGM had some bomb that year, and so they were just like, let's not spend so much money on this. Whatever it is.
Hmm.
So producer Charles Robin shops the project around Hollywood, and Dimension Films agrees to co-finance the rest of the movie with MGM with a budget of $75 million. Now, MGM would handle international distribution and Dimension would take over production. This will be Dimension's most expensive film they've ever produced, and they're mostly known for low-budget horror films like what franchise?
Scream.
That's right. Dimension is a division of Miramax Films. Who are Miramax?
Ugh.
Yeah, the Weinsteins.
Yeah. So the scariest thing about that movie was right when it started and the Miramax logo came up. It was like, oh, God. Whoa. That's hard to watch.
You know it's bad when the company logo comes up and you're like, oh, this hasn't aged well. This movie's problematic.
Yes, the Weinsteins. So
Bob, just like stay clear of any scandal. Like, what's like I, you don't ever
hear
about.
Okay, real quickly, Harvey Weinstein.
Are you asking
is...
what about Bob?
Harvey Weinstein is the rapist, like piece of shit, going to
prison jail.
for 30 years or whatever, it is, or lifetime. I don't remember. Whatever he's
absolute
he was an absolute
human.
Garbage human who sexually assaulted like almost 100 women. Okay. Bob Weinstein only has one accusation against him that came out.
Only one.
So, I mean, that's just the one, right? And then his brother, after all that stuff came out about his brother, he came out and said that he hadn't talked to his brother in years and completely
like
distanced himself.
Distancing himself.
And
I've
all
never
all
heard
companies.
Of that guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Who?
Yeah. His name is Harvey, you say.
Harvey. Yeah.
Much like the Brothers Grimm, you know?
Yeah. I do feel like, though, like when you're that close, like when your family and your business partners, there's no way he didn't know shit was happening.
No way.
Like,
yeah,
there's no
someone
way.
Covering like, up something. Yeah,
yeah like,
yeah.
So, I refuse to believe the whole, like, la, 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 la. Yeah. I didn't know what was going on. Like, distancing yourself is just, it's just a self-preservation.
Yeah,
but he's not still, like, producing stuff, though.
Yes, he is.
Oh, he is?
Yeah, he started another company and people are kind of like.
Is it called Just Bob?
definitely
no,
not.
It's called
Hardy.
La 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 La.
Films.
Not that Weinstein Productions.
Not Harvey.
Yeah. It's called Head in the Sand Productions.
he started up another thing and people were kind of like, fuck you, why would you ever sign on to working with him? Let's see if he ever comes back. Okay, so why the Weinsteins were interested? Because it could be their next franchise. Okay, so they were thinking this is going to be a big old thing.
There's nothing studios love more than franchise opportunity.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, if you're going to spend $75 million on something, if you get a sequel out of it, hell yeah.
Right, especially with something like the Brothers Grimm, where there's apparently over 200 fairy tales that they've
done. Yeah,
yeah. Exactly. They had a handful in this one. Yeah.
I mean, stepping back from that kind of point, like, that makes sense. Like, they could go on all kinds of fun adventures, you know?
Yeah, like, honestly, if this movie had worked, like, I would love to see those two in, like, spooky, creepy fairy tale movies for years and years and years.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I would have watched all of those. That's my jam.
So, Gilliam was not happy that he was now in business with the Weinsteins. He knew their reputation for
being rapists.
Executive meddling.
Oh,
and there's nothing he loves more than executive meddling.
Yeah. This is Gilliam on the Weinsteins.
They interfered more than I've ever been interfered with before. If I were younger, we'd call it child abuse. And then I love that there's in parentheses here, laughs.
Yeah, I wanted to emphasize the fact that he was joking. Okay. So as a reminder, Will Grimm is the showman brother. Mm-hmm. And Jacob Grimm is the book nerd. Okay. Mm-hmm. Damon Ledger signed on, and they wanted to just work with Gilliam. They were just like, I will do anything. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. But originally, Damon was cast as Jacob, and Ledger was Will. And then this happened.
Matt tried to convince me he could play the part of Will, and I said, no, you don't play those parts. That's what Ben Affleck normally plays. We spent a whole... That's so rude. Damn.
Oh, man.
We spent a whole evening arguing about this one, and he left saying, well, I'll play whichever part you want me to play. Next morning, Heath came over. No, I want to play Jake. Oh, God, here we go. I ran Heath over to Matt and said, meet your brother Jake. And Matt said, last night you convinced me I'd play Jake. No, last night you convinced me you could play Will. Get to work.
Is this some gaslighting right there? It's like,
yeah.
No, you told me.
So basically, they wanted to both play the other part.
They both wanted to do against type.
That's what's so interesting about it, is because I think that when you think about those characters, you would assume that they would be switched, because like Heath Ledger was kind of like
the heartthrob. And Matt Damon, other than Born Identity.
Yeah.
Other, because remember when Born Identity was coming out, people were kind of like, what? This guy is going to be the action star? The talented Mr. Ripley? Yeah, that nerd. Yeah. Right?
It's like a Keaton Batman thing all over again.
Yeah, exactly. And so you don't, like, it doesn't make sense. Like, you watch it now and you go, of course Damon is that part.
Yeah.
Like, but at the time, that was kind of not what he was known for.
Right.
And definitely not Ledger playing a wimpy nerd.
Oh my God, but he was so cute though. Can we all just agree that he was so cute? I just, the whole time I was just like, oh my God, he's so cute. It was actually more interesting that they played against type.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I don't think Ledger was that great in it. I think he kind of overdoes it a little bit.
How dare you?
But he is, it is kind of fun seeing him play just someone who just feels out of his depth and unmoored in a way. Okay, now that the Weinsteins were in control, they started meddling with the casting. Oh boy, here we go. For Angelica, Gilliam wanted Samantha Morton, a major independent film actress. You've probably seen her in a dozen things, but her biggest role at the time was in Minority Report. She was one of the precogs, or the precog that goes with Tom Cruise on the journey.
Okay.
When she yells run at his face.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. But the Weinsteins wanted a more conventionally beautiful actress.
Fuck these guys, man.
This is what the reports were saying in 2005. Okay, side shit show. In 2000, Samantha Morton passed on the Miramax film About Adam, a romantic comedy with Kate Hudson and Stuart Townsend.
Okay.
I looked up the trailer. I'm like, I've never even heard of this movie. Morton felt that the script was misogynistic and didn't want to do it. But Harvey Weinstein kept putting the offer in front of her, saying, "You're not going to work again unless you do this rule.
Ugh.
Going to make your life hell. You will not work again."
Ugh.
Morton,
piece of shit,
still said no. And going forward, still had a very like healthy independent film career, because Harvey Weinstein can't control what these independent producers are doing.
Right.
Right.
Right. So she can, she continued
still got,
stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when Brothers Grimm came up, Weinstein told Gilliam he couldn't cast her because she was unfuckable.
God.
Oh my God.
What a garbage human. Kay. Also, like, what a big old man baby. Like, he's just like, I don't get what I want. So,
exactly.
Like, and he just basically throws a tantrum.
Uh-huh. Okay, so Lena Headey was cast instead. And in 2017, she also came forward with harassment stories related to Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah, of course.
During the press for Brothers Grimm. She also said that she was subjected to endless bullying by the director, Terry Gilliam.
Mm-hmm.
So, to be fair to like Gilliam, like she said that, but I was kind of looking around to kind of see if there was something else that was said about that, or if he apologized or something. But I mean, everything I was reading about was how much people just love working for Terry Gilliam. So I'd take that with a bit of a grain of salt. I don't know. Maybe he was just mad and giving her the cold shoulder because he didn't want to cast her.
It would make sense. I'm not saying it's right. But like, if she wasn't his first choice, if he was just like mad that she was there. But that's like not fair to her.
Oh, I agree.
That would suck.
But I don't know the full story.
Yeah, for sure.
In 2019 comes the book She Said, Breaking the Sexual Harassment Story That Helped Ignite a Movement, written by the two New York Times investigative reporters that exposed Harvey Weinstein's history of abuse and sexual misconduct and was the catalyst for the Me Too movement. Instrumental in that case was the testimony of Zelda Perkins, a former assistant to Weinstein who's frequently sexually harassed by him. She Said was made into a movie in 2022, where Perkins was played by Samantha Morton.
Hell yes!
Oh!
Oh, I love it.
Rules.
Yeah, right? A little bit of a...
justice for Samantha. I love that.
A little bit.
Oh, yeah. That's so good.
It's a little
makes
tasty morsel of justice.
Yeah, I mean, as little as it is, it's something, you know?
Yeah. I bet when they came to her, it's like, hey, do you want to play this role? She's probably like, yeah, fuck yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I was born.
With that's the true. They reached out to a lot of those people.
Yeah. She probably said that with the intensity of how she yelled run in Minority Report.
Okay. Robin Williams. Robin Williams was meant to play Cavaldi.
Oh.
The Italian torturer.
Oh, my God, Cavaldi.
So
Peter Stormare's character.
But he was also on Harvey Weinstein's shit list. So when Good Will Hunting was making it big at the box office, so like it was a really big hit, and it was currently in theaters, Weinstein pulled it from theaters because Williams stood to make too much money because he gets back end deals.
Oh.
So he just didn't want to give that much money to Williams.
What a spiteful turd.
Yeah, I know. Since then, the two were feuding.
Right.
Like, and you know how big of a dick Harvey Weinstein is, but every time you hear just like something new that you maybe haven't heard before, you're just like,
what a monster.
What a fucking asshole. Like,
yeah.
On every single
every
level.
Every single level.
Every level.
And for so long. So he was forced to not allow Williams to be in the movie. He was replaced by Peter Stormare, who actually I love.
Great.
I don't know. You were about to say something that you were kind of annoyed.
I love him.
I know. I love Peter Stormare.
I love him. He's so good in everything he does.
Everything.
I don't know. Like, as I'm watching this movie, I'm just thinking to myself, why did they do this to you? but then like his character like grew on me after a while. But a lot of it, I'm just like, I don't know. There's a part of me that just like kind of felt bad for him, like a wounded dog. I don't know why. I just like.
Okay. So moving on from Peter Stormare. Okay.
Do we have to? He's so great.
So set building was particularly difficult as the Czech Republic had already two full-scale productions going on. Alien versus Predator, which is kind of a smaller
Interesting.
One. But then Van Helsing, which was this huge big budget one.
Are those two shit shows? Please tell me that they weren't, because I do not want to watch those again.
Okay. And all the seasoned professionals were busy on those sets, leaving most of the Grimm crew with hired hands who were total novices at their jobs.
Oh, God.
And they were hired to do like constructing and painting and stuff like that.
Interesting.
It's who someone in our Discord was talking about how they kind of like lied in their job application just to work on a movie. That's what this is kind of. It is like someone just going, yeah, I can do that.
Yeah,
but
it
was just a bunch of people did that.
I can swing a hammer, no problem.
I know how to use a drill. Yeah. Sure.
Table saw? Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't realize the Czech Republic had so many productions filmed there, but I guess it makes sense.
Yeah. No, it's huge. Yeah.
Because it's one of the most well-preserved medieval cities in Europe. And so if you're doing like a medieval movie.
But it's also crazy cheaper.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So the village was built right outside of Prague on a hill just in case it flooded because the previous year had a major flood.
For LXG.
So,
at least they learned from that mistake.
The production designer was talking about how he was just like, he's like, I knew that was going to happen again. Yeah. And so he was like prepared.
You're like, maybe we shouldn't build our set on this floodplain off the banks of the river.
This part on the map that says floodplain.
On this Venice set.
Yeah. I will say the sets, one of the very first things, I watched this with a friend, and one of the very first things we noticed is like they're coming in to like, it's the first time that I don't remember what town they're going into when we first meet the brothers grown up. But they're coming into this town and they're
That first setup, the one where they do the ghost.
Barn witch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When they like come in on their horses, they're passing these shops and I was like, this looks like Fantasyland at Disneyland.
Yeah.
There's Peter Pan's flight. There's Snow White's adventure. Well,
I mean, ironically, you say that because that was in a real town. That one was real.
The whole movie, though, did have that quality sort of being like a Disneyland ride or like a stage play. But I didn't hate it. Like it was kind of fun.
No,
I
thought it looked awesome.
Yeah, that sort of look I think worked for it, that everything looked a little bit sort of fake or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, fairy tale-ish, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like kind of weird angles. The village was meant to be damp, but ironically, they had a super dry season. So after their flood season, they had a super dry season.
Oh, God.
But they smartly built sprinklers into the roofs so they could wet the whole set.
Okay.
Oh.
So that's why it's always muddy.
Dude, that is the muddiest movie. I just, like, every single scene, they're, like, slipping in, like, mud. I'm just like, God damn, like, it's muddy.
How do you reset up for that? Okay, wash all of this off?
Yeah. Like, like, the wardrobe department's, like, washing your shoes and shit
over
off
and
of
over.
Your costumes.
All right, let's hose down Damon.
Yep.
Yeah.
Hose him down.
That was my job. can you hose down actors? Yeah, I can do that.
I can do that.
I was the Damon Hoser.
It's a credited part.
No, I only want to clean Damon.
Some creeper.
I would have volunteered to hose off Heath Ledger. I'm just saying.
Oh no!
I call this a goodwill hosing.
I'm gonna have to get inside your shirt on this one. Okay, Damon was originally supposed to have a prosthetic nose. One that looked like had been repeatedly broken. Kind of an idea that he was A, defending his brother a lot, and B, maybe because they're kind of shysters. They're like, he was just getting punched in the face a lot.
Yeah. They should just cast what's his face?
Owen Wilson.
Yeah.
During one of the interviews, someone was talking to Damon, and he's like, he was describing the nose, and someone was like Owen Wilson, and he was kind of like, yeah, like, you don't want to throw an actor in the bus, under the bus.
Owen's at home watching TV. Wow.
But just imagine this movie with Owen and Luke Wilson in these roles.
Wow. So
that kind of works,
actually.
Yeah,
I
kind of
be okay with it.
Because Owen Wilson as Will actually works.
There's a witch in your barn. Wow.
I'm not opposed to it.
Can Owen Wilson do a British accent?
But they're German. It doesn't matter. Accents don't matter.
No, accents are irrelevant in this
Completely
film.
Irrelevant.
Don't even bring it up.
They're behind the scenes, like that was on the DVD. Gilliam straight up makes a joke about, he's like, well, I mean, what are they going to do? It's, you know, they're in a French town being Germans with British accents.
Yeah.
We got Matt Damon and Heath Ledger, an Australian and an American, playing Germans in the 19th century with English accents.
No one bats an eye. I mean, we've all seen Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. Like, no one cares.
Yeah. So he was supposed to have this fake nose, but Bob Weinstein refused, saying he didn't want to pay for Damon's salary if he was going to make him unrecognizable.
Not look like Damon.
Right.
Right.
I'm paying for that face.
Yeah. And so this was the exact fear Gilliam had working with the Weinsteins.
Yeah.
And he was ready to quit right then and there when he was told.
He was
no.
Like, it's me or the nose.
Yeah.
You're like, this is the hill? This is the nose we decided to die on?
Yeah, right?
Yeah. Ironically, he was standing on the hill where they built the set as well. Like, I will die
I will die on this goddamn hill.
Nose.
He just says, fuck it. Just jumps onto the muddy slide. slip and slides out of it.
Gilliam out.
I mean, slip and sliding is arguably the coolest way to exit any
situation.
Really. Just like, bye, bitches. I'm out. Like, just slip and slide right on out of there.
It's like a mic drop.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Okay, so as a compromise, Weinstein secured additional funding for the movie, and Gilliam reluctantly decided to stay.
So they're like, you can't have the nose, but here's more money.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, all right.
Okay, going forward, I will only be referring to Bob Weinstein, okay? So when I say Weinstein, I'm only referring to the less problematic one. Okay.
Still problematic. Scandal noted.
Yeah. Less. Scandal noted.
Scandal noted.
Okay. After the casting battles,
wait,
and
why?
The nose
is because he's the one.
He was the one just he was the one
main
controlling.
On
he
the
was
movie?
Yeah, he
okay,
was the main
see.
Producer on this one.
Got it.
Okay, so after the casting battles and the nose fight, Gilliam was not happy, and he started. And he started the first day of filming with no desire to make the movie anymore.
Ugh.
So this is the kind of attitude he already has. Like, he's just, no, I don't want to get my way.
Yeah.
6 weeks in, Weinstein fires Gilliam's cinematographer, Nicola Piccarini, because he's shooting too slowly.
Frame rate or like?
Yeah. Well, I know, but it doesn't make any fucking sense because it's like, who's calling action?
Yeah.
It's not the cinematographer.
Right.
So
that is weird.
He is given the credit of additional photographer. You can see it in the opening credits. Mm. Newton Thomas Siegel replaced him. He did all of Bryan Singer's movies, like the X-Men movies, at Pupil.
Notoriously fast cinematographer. Just the fastest.
The fastest cinematography in the game.
Gilliam said Siegel was even slower.
What?
Oh, no. Wait, never mind.
Take it back.
Look,
I just really need someone to explain to me what that means.
What fast
I know, right?
I don't, because there's so many things that have to be ready to shoot a shot. And then once you're shooting, like, there's no speed. You just, like, shooting. And then
I mean, you can make the argument that they were taking too long to set up lights.
Cameras.
Or,
okay. Yeah,
I
maybe.
Don't know, something.
But is that really I don't know what really I have an idea of what the cinematographer does. Like, I mean, that's how we get the movie, like, on film or in digital or whatever.
Yeah.
But, like, are they the ones, like, all right, I guess I got to load the camera. If they're using film, which I don't think anybody is, all right, I got to set up the lights. Like,
at this time,
he's in charge of all of that. So he would be planning out the light setup, directing the setting up of the lights, wouldn't be doing it, would be, like, planning out the camera positions, choosing lenses, loading film. So like, yeah, I guess so it's just the job like of planning literal camera all that. Setup. Yeah.
Okay, but they're not like, bro, I know you're a cinematographer, but these lights are not up yet.
Yeah, like, that'd be like the head electrician. Slow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, like, but
the head electrician
grips.
Didn't know what he was doing. He lied on his resume.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought I would be hosing down Damon. Yeah.
He's just like, why do you need lights? There's the sun. The sun is right there.
I hold hose.
I hold hose? Yeah. I hold hose. I'll be your best boy, Graham.
Okay. So, I mean, I guess that, like, I mean, if they want to go at that from that angle, like, look, you're not telling your people what to do to get it up faster.
Camera
like,
setups
I,
are too
that
slow.
I can understand. But, like, you turn the camera on and, like, you hit the shutter button
you
or
just
whatever.
Just stand back like this.
It's like, all right.
It's happening. I turned the camera on. It's going.
He just closes his eyes.
Because they're not even the ones like operating the cameras too, right? Like that's.
So, I mean, it depends.
Depends.
It really
yeah.
depends it on depends. The situation.
So I mean,
sometimes it's even the director that's holding the camera. It really depends.
So
on what's
to
going
me,
on.
It just sounds like they're just looking for someone to fire.
Yeah, kind of. Really, yeah. kind of to control Gilliam in a way. So Gilliam was so enraged at this point, he used it as a chance to get off the film. He stopped filming for 2 weeks while he discussed his options with his lawyer, who in turn told him it would be better for him just to complete the movie than deal with a lawsuit with the Weinsteins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunate.
Clint, you're going to be our Matt Damon.
Oh, I got to get hosed.
Yeah. Well, while you read this quote, we're going to get you wet.
All right. Here we go. I'm ready. Shirts off. All right. I've never been in a situation like that. Terry was spitting rage at the system, at the Weinsteins. You can't try and impose big compromises on a visionary director like him. If you try to force him to do what you want creatively, he'll go nuclear.
So he's the kind of the guy that will just flip out over a nose.
Yeah.
Right?
He'll hose you down with fire, baby.
Yeah. filming took place between June and November of 2003. It was meant to take place over 17 weeks and ended up taking 22. And the last few were rushing through it because Damon had a heart out because he was off to do The Bourne Supremacy.
And Terry Gilliam was like, I would like to be done with this as quickly as
yeah, let's move on.
Possible.
If you're right.
And the cinematography is going real slow, so let's pick up the pace here. Monica Bellucci was not hired until September. After Nicole Kidman backed out.
Yeah.
Oh, Monica Bellucci is like.
Unreal.
Like insanely beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it fit even better.
Yeah.
So once filming was done, the fight between Gilliam and Bob Weinstein reached its height. They were at odds with the final edit of the movie. And Gilliam said the division was so extreme, Weinstein kept referring to another film. Within Brothers Grimm, Gilliam didn't understand what he was talking about. He was like, find the other film inside of it.
Oh, man.
Gilliam was told he made a bad version of Spy Kids.
What?
What?
I don't get what that means.
That
doesn't make any sense.
Like, maybe, like...
I mean, he's saying Spy Kids is good, though, right?
There's a lot yeah, going yes. on. There's layers. And
it was an unfavorable comparison
right.
to Spy Kids. Yeah. Meaning, my guess is a movie that appeals to adults and kids, maybe? That's what they were going for? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
Jenny Ray, this is Terry Gilliam about dealing with the Weinsteins in Hollywood.
Hollywood is run by small-minded people who like chopping the legs off creative people. All they want to do is say no. I'm used to riding roughshod over studio executives, but the Weinsteins rode roughshod over me.
So, originally, both the Walking Trees and the Wolf were animatronic.
Oh, that would have been so rad.
Yeah, because like...
I love a practical.
Yeah.
But as Gilliam said... They look terrible.
Oh, the animatronics.
They looked yeah. worse than they ended up looking in the movie.
Yeah.
When okay, I don't know
how that's possible.
So this came out in 2005.
Five.
When did the Exorcist prequels came out that we watched? Was that around the same time? Because that wolf looked just like those goddamn hyenas.
I mean, yeah, on the same level, probably. Yeah. Yeah. So Gilliam said that they looked terrible. So the effect shots for the movie went from 500 to 800. Now, the VFX studio Peerless Camera, which Gilliam actually created back in the 70s, the studio still exists, was not given the extra budget for all those extra shots.
No. Ooh. Do more, but with the same amount of money.
Yeah, like 40% more.
Yeah.
Yikes.
That never bodes well for visual effects.
I read quite a few reviews saying that they thought the effects were rather cheesy, not particularly good. And I kept hearing this, and I was getting very tired, and I was at a film festival last year, and a journalist said, you know, the effects in Grimm was something, what happened, what went wrong? I said, okay, I've had enough of this. I want you to name one specific shot so I understand what you're talking about. He said, well, there's that scene where Matt's got that big frog or toad and he's licking it. I mean, it's a terrible CG frog. I said, no, that's a real one.
So Weinstein and Gilliam agreed to disagree, and they walked away from the film for 6 months.
What?
To
what?
See if they felt the same way after that time.
So they took a break.
They just took a break.
They're on
a
break.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
But they didn't even go to, like, couples therapy.
No. They just decided to
space. Let's see other movies. We'll see other movies.
Yeah.
See some other producers and directors and then come back and see how we feel after.
So the visual effects were also put on hold. Gilliam went off and made an entire other film, Tideland. This was the other film he was thinking about making. But
obviously not with the same, like not with Miramax.
No, completely independent kind of project. It kind of worked. They came back and they conceded on both sides. Gilliam admits when he returned to the film, he saw flaws that he was able to correct. And he was only a few of them. This is Terry Gilliam during the press tour of how the movie turned out. This is in 2005.
I actually think we made it better without succumbing to other people's idea about what would make it better.
Okay, this is Gilliam in 2009.
It's not quite the film they wanted, and it's not quite the film I wanted. It's the film that is a result of two people or two groups of people who aren't working well together.
Yeah.
Changed his tune there.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. But that, I mean, that kind of makes sense, right?
It does, yeah.
It makes sense a lot. Yeah. You watch that movie and you're like, oh, yeah, these guys did not agree.
No.
Yeah, there's something definitely off. Like, especially that opening sequence where it just goes hard cut.
Yeah.
You're just like, it set a tone of like, what is happening?
Yeah.
And that first half hour, I would say, is just real rough.
Yeah.
I think there's a certain point where it was suddenly like, oh, it's kind of working now. These things are kind of coming together. But then, like,
all the while, Peter Stormare is just doing whatever he
wants to do. Seriously, his character and plot, and then his whole thing with the general, that French general, that felt like a Monty Python sketch.
Yeah,
just,
right.
Like, yes. In this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
That just kept going.
Yeah.
Tonally, it was all over the place.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
You could tell there were good ideas and there was really creepy, spooky stuff. Like when they were capturing the kids. Like,
yeah, those two sequences
start
off really great.
Of that was like, oh my God, this is so creepy. But like the visual effects looked shitty. And then the
gingerbread
scene where the little girl's like,
oh my God.
She's like, yum, I taste good. It's just like, what? Like, you could tell that someone was like, oh, but we need to make this friendly for kids. So could you just like throw in like a funny line? And it's like, no, that's not what's happening here. Like, it was so
bad. I have never experienced such a roller coaster of emotions in my life watching a film. I was like, when she like got the mud off, yeah, and then her eyes were gone, and I was like, this is so cool.
Yeah, that was creepy.
So
that was
ready.
Effective.
I was so ready for it to be cool, and then as soon as it morphed into the gingerbread man, I was like, ha!
It was
my stomach fell.
When the Pokemon Ditto came crawling out of the well.
No, Flubber. That was Flubber.
Kind of looked like Flubber, too.
No, that whole scene, like, haunts my dreams, but for all the wrong reasons. Like,
I think like it is kind of like fun and whimsical. Like you can forgive the blob that's chasing the kid. Like I can forgive that moment, but it's when it turns into the gingerbread man. And just bites himself, and it just looks really terrible, and it's just animated very poorly.
On the mud slip slide down the hill.
You're like, I'm out.
I'm out.
You just left your friend to watch the rest of the movie.
Let me know how this turns out. Yeah, so like you can see the Terry Gilliam in there, where it's like, oh, this is kind of moody and dark and creepy and a little bit bizarre, because that's very much his style, with a little bit of like Monty Python humor kind of thrown in. And then it also felt like they were trying to make like a commercial Hollywood movie.
Yeah,
and it's like stuck
in the middle. It was stuck in the middle. Yeah.
Yeah,
and it just it doesn't know where that line is, and it's just kind of confusing. So okay, so what was left on the cutting room floor? Okay, there's like 15 minutes of deleted scenes, mostly connective tissue, lots of Cavaldi, lots of scenes of him and the king or the general.
The general.
There's a scene with Cavaldi's henchman reading Jacob's story of Cinderella while they're in the town. This is why the brothers are cleaning the floors in bonnets.
That's that didn't make any sense.
Yeah, just suddenly cuts to them just cleaning the floor in bonnets, and you're like, are they just humiliating?
Well,
like,
no, what? I got it. I was like, oh, they're doing a Cinderella thing.
Yeah.
But like, why?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's no explanation as to why. Yeah.
And so there's the part where the guy, one of the henchmen's reading the Cinderella story, that it kind of answered a question for me, which was, what was in Jacob's books? Because it just kind of alludes to he's just taking notes, right? He's just taking notes of what's going on. But that scene kind of goes, oh, no, he's taking the notes to write stories.
It's this.
He's writing the stories.
He's writing
this
all
the tome.
Yeah. So like, I feel like that scene should have been in the movie. Because otherwise, it's just Jacob's notes.
Yeah.
Not his stories.
Right. And the book was really important to him, because when they threw it on the fire, right? He was just like, no, my book. Like, he cared about the book more than his own life.
Yeah, exactly. So one other connective tissue shows that Angelica gets how she gets loose from the French soldiers. Speaking of when they're being burned, when she just suddenly shows up and like gets them off the ladders.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So she was tied up, and there's this really creepy scene of a guard, Harvey Weinsteining, in a way. It's very fucked up watching it. So she gets out of the situation. It's played for comedy. It's very cringy. Anyway, so there's that scene. But the biggest thing that was cut, after the trees attack, when they first go to the forest, and or the second time, Angelica sees the wolf. Mm-hmm. And then she goes, his eyes, or those eyes, when she like kind of freezes there for a moment. It hard cuts to her and the Grimms running out of the woods. And remember, we were like, how the fuck? They weren't even together.
They weren't even together. Where did she? Yeah. It was so confusing.
So they cut an entire scene of the three of them fighting a giant whomping willow-like tree. And this is completely like finished CG.
Oh, wow.
And they're being thrown around, and Peerless Camera was told it was cut because it felt like too much of a climax. Like it was too big of a moment to happen in the middle of the movie. But really, if you think about it, Prisoner of Azkaban came out in 2004, and the scene is very familiar. Mm. Oh. So I think while they were feuding between the cuts, they saw that scene. And they were kind of like, this is very similar, because it's literally about them riding the tree, and they're flying around, and they're trying to get off of the tree.
Right.
Like, and the tree looks kind of similar. Like, I think that's what happened.
But then, like, with cutting that out, you just lose a whole, like, connective tissue part.
Exactly.
It's just like, I don't know. Don't worry about it. They just found each other somehow.
Yeah, exactly. So that's how the three of them wind up together.
Well, I mean, I didn't even think about that, so I guess it worked.
we were talking about this after watching it, that you can really tell that this movie struggled in the edit. Like there's kind of a lot of other stuff going wrong, but you're just like, the editing is bad, and you shouldn't notice editing. And so like, if you're noticing that like cuts are weird and continuity is weird and things don't make sense, or like things are hard cutting, it's just like, they were just lopping stuff off for time or whatever.
Yeah.
And with no consideration for how that actually affected the products.
Yeah.
Okay. So now they agreed on an edit. The problem then became not having finished VFX. So more money went into completing the visual effects, further delaying the film. This is Terry Gilliam about general consensus of working on the film.
It happens with every film. There comes a part where the money and the creative elements all come crashing together. Everybody's under a lot of pressure and everybody is panicking about what works and what doesn't. And the studios and the money always have one perspective and the creative people have another one. And usually what happens is a lot of compromises get made. I decided not to.
Okay. Now, the next quote is from Bob Weinstein. So, okay, scandal noted, but I do think what he says here is very apropos of our entire shit show. I think this is kind of an interesting comment and to play both sides.
Any film involves the making of 10,000 decisions. If you only concentrate on the few we had issues with, you ignore the 9,997 we left totally to Terry.
Completely fair.
Mm, yeah.
Right? Mm. Was the broken nose that important to the overall movie? Right?
I mean, it sounds like Terry Gilliam is just the type of person who's like, I don't like being meddled with.
Yeah.
And so if you try to step in and step on my creativeness, like I will throw a giant fit and just quit. Like I would rather just quit than have to deal with your bullshit.
Yeah.
Which like I get that, but it's also just kind of like, yeah, but you're still like, you still got to like get this movie made. You got to kind of like, sometimes you have to like be an adult and just be like, okay, well this sucks, but like, okay, let me try to like problem solve and work around this issue and like make it work for everybody, all the interested parties of this film.
Yeah, because it's not just about you. It's about all the hundreds of people that are working for you.
Yeah.
The release date was originally November 2004. It was moved to February 2005, then July 2005, then November 2005, and then was finally moved up to August 2005.
See, that tracks as to why I never saw it, because I left on my religious excursion in 2005.
There you go.
So
that's why
I
never saw it.
Oh, you missed out.
17 years later, I'm like, oh, I should get to that.
But the film was actually not completed until June of 2005. So almost 2 years after they started making it.
That's got to be so weird for an actor. I don't know. That just
goes away.
Yeah. Like I worked on this. I got paid for it. All right, cool. And then like 2 years later, you're like, oh, yeah.
Like, yeah, I remember I did that.
Oh,
yeah.
That's coming out? Oh great. Yeah. Forgot about that.
Like, do they get notified? It's like, oh, hey, like they got like some assistants. Like, oh, hey, by the way, your film that you did. it's delayed again.
The Brothers Grimm released August 26th, 2005. Miramax spent $30 million on the marketing. And opening weekend, it was beaten by the second week of what? Steve Carell comedy.
40-year-old
virgin. 40-year-old virgin.
Wow.
The second week.
The second week.
Oh, that's
a bummer.
Rough.
On a budget of $88 million, the film grossed $37 million in the United States. But a total of $105 million worldwide. So with marketing, it's still kind of bombed.
Yeah.
But I feel like the time is right for like, not a reboot, but like, a refresh, like, because I think this is still just like such a great idea. Like,
okay, well, let's get to there in a second. So
we're so good at this podcast.
14 days later, Tideland, Gilliam's other movie, debuted at Toronto International Film Festival. Wow. That's how long it took.
Jeez. Wow, the movie that he made in between, like, also came out the same year.
Yeah, 14 days later.
Jeez,
that's a Spielberg move, isn't it? Like,
kind of. This is Gilliam at the end of this road.
However difficult and painful it's been, everybody seems to like the film. It may not be the deepest film I've ever made, but I do think there's real enchantment in it.
Okay.
Who's the everybody in that sentence?
Yeah.
Who's he talking about?
That feels like a stretch to me.
Worth it.
I mean, for the money it made and for the headache that I'm sure that was involved with everybody, especially Gilliam having to deal with the Weinsteins, I have to kind of just say no.
Yeah.
Because like I feel like there is a good movie there that somebody hasn't made that might be making. Ian tells us maybe later. I don't know. He says we'll get to that. So I feel like there's a better version of this that could be done.
Yeah.
Without the headache of Rapey McGee getting his gross fingers in there.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. Like, and it didn't, you know, it didn't, it's not like it ruined anybody's careers or anything. Like, Matt Damon are like continued and continues to have a great career. And like, Heath Ledger obviously went on to do great things with Dark Knight.
For only 3 more years.
For only 3 more years. I know, it's such a bummer.
Lena Headey is, you know, she's Cersei, not hurting Lannister. For anything. Yeah. She's great.
So it was just kind of, I don't know, it just feels like kind of a blip of a movie that just like, it was such an interesting idea. It could have been really good, but it wasn't. And it's just kind of like forgettable and like I said, unfortunate. It's an unfortunate movie.
Yeah. You know, you're right when you say it was forgettable, because when I was going to re-ask you two in our text thread, like what the homework was. It's like, I'm pretty sure they already told me. I completely forgot that you gave me the homework of the Brothers Grimm.
And you actually watched it.
Yes.
You finished the movie. Well, what was my homework again?
I scrolled through my text because, you know, we text a lot and I love it. But then I was like, oh, that's right. They said the Brothers Grimm. I forgot that they sent me that. And I forgot that that was a movie.
Again, I forgot Again. About it.
Yeah.
Yeah, like it's making a movie about the origin of fairy tales and making it like spooky and creepy and dark, which is how all of those are. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like such a cool idea, but just didn't work. So, yeah, I wouldn't say it was worth it.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't like it didn't end up being worth it for anyone, but I also think that like it's not notoriously bad because it's so forgettable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people aren't walking around being like, oh my God, you remember that Brothers Grimm movie that came out?
Yeah.
What a stinker. Like, it just.
Maybe there. I mean, it could be like one of those things where some people grew up on this movie and just fucking love it.
That's
is it on TV? Like, on rotation on TV?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
So if you're listening to this podcast on YouTube or whatever, send us a comment and tell us if this is your favorite movie.
This is your favorite movie.
Yeah, I feel like I had the most downer opinion on the movie of the crew based on what everybody sort of was saying. And my surprise in hearing about its production woes was actually that this wasn't a script that was passed around 600 times.
Right.
To me, the writing was so bad and all over the place that like, oh, you mean somebody wrote this and then maybe somebody rewrote it, kind of, and then that was the end of that story? Because that's wild to me. So I feel like sort of across the board, sort of not worth it because it was like not good and also not terrible for anyone. There we go. Except for me. The only person it was bad for was me.
I mean, I guess if you want to do a silver lining for this, if you do want to watch this for like a bad movie night, and you could turn a drinking game into every time they mention the word beans, you take a shot.
Yeah.
And you'd have a great time.
Yeah, that's true. But you're right though, that this isn't even like a fun bad. Like, this, I wouldn't even consider this like a shitty movie night drinking movie, because it's not bad enough to be like, oh my God, this is so fucking cheesy and terrible. It's not like
enough.
Yeah, it's just not like bad enough to be fun bad. It's just kind of like meh.
I feel bad like sometimes when we're talking about these movies and whether or not it was worth it, and we're always asking if this was someone's like favorite movie, because the thing that I hate the most is when I'm like, oh, I really enjoyed that movie, and then someone like starts to like point out those flaws, and I just think to myself, God, am I really that ignorant? So I always hate doing that, but at the same time, I like looking at it from Ian's perspective, like doing the research of why it was a shit show, and then and kind of getting a better understanding as to why it just did not work.
I think the thing that just bums me out the most is that it had so much potential. Like, this absolutely had the potential to be my favorite movie. Because it's like, it's got Heath Ledger and it's about fairy tales and it's kind of dark and like spooky. Like, yes! And it's like, oh.
I think what we were saying while we were watching it is that everything was working in this movie except the finished product. It's so weird because the acting was great, the sets were amazing, the cinematography was actually pretty cool at some points. I love the style, like the look of like the tower and stuff, like in that area. Like, there's so many things that were working. It was like, why is it not coming together? And it, like I said, that first half hour is real rough. You're sitting there just going like, why is this seem so off? Like, it seems broken.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm probably the one that liked it the most out of all of you. I think there's a lot to enjoy in it. Peter Stormare, absolutely. I think he, even though he's just like the weirdest stuff, but like just these little things he was doing, like he's told to stop rotating the thing to make the guys like lower into the cauldron. And then he just pushes it a little bit.
He just
more.
Like keeps going a little bit.
Like, or just like, just those little flourishes that were in the movie that I really liked. And I think Matt Damon is really great in it. There's some really funny, there's some funny lines like the, what a strapping young man you have there. He's my daughter. And a fine wife you'll make someday. Like, there's some like really like fun stuff in there.
That
and
was a
I do
good
like
line.
I think like the girl getting eaten by the horse, it was actually pretty effective. I think that,
yeah.
that whole sequence with the with
so
the cobwebs
scary.
Was actually really mm-hmm. cool.
That was one of my favorite bits.
Yeah, and the scene with the kid losing
the
her
mud,
face
yeah.
was really good, and then it got
until
real bad.
It was the worst.
Yeah. Until it was the worst.
I know exactly what Sequoia was talking about though, because you don't know like when you're watching this movie, you don't know how you're supposed to feel, because then there's goofy scenes like that, and then all of a sudden, like, yeah, she gets swallowed by a horse. You're like, oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, that just happened.
And then there was that other scene, like, when they lift up the like the heads of the two
yeah,
people. Like,
yeah.
Like, what the fuck? And then there was, like, another scene where, like, a cat, like, some...
Gets kicked into the grinder.
Yes. Yeah,
the
yeah.
cat.
Gets...
Kitten.
And, like, the blood splatters on the general's face, and he takes, like, a chunk of it. I'm like, what the
what
hell
is
this movie?
Yeah, it is all over
I don't
the
know
fucking
how. Yeah,
place.
So I get
Pick
what Sequoia's saying. You
yeah,
don't know how
yeah.
to feel during watching that. And I think that was probably one of the biggest, like, things that was, for me, yeah. is why it was a shit show. Like, because you could tell, like, no one knows what this movie is supposed to, how this movie is supposed to make you feel.
And then I also do, like, the ending. I thought the ending was really, like, there was cool moments. But the part of them floating around with the daggers was just real bad.
Oh, yeah. God.
My whole thought process was like, just let go of the dagger.
I was just like, they didn't do a good enough job establishing what the spell was and
yeah.
how it was working so that you could figure out how they were going to break it. What is this writing? This doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it seemed
yeah.
half-assed. Yeah.
No,
yeah.
you're totally right. It was like it's okay, so it's some kind of blood magic, but and then they were like, "Oh, well, like she already did the spell to live forever. She just like she didn't do the youth part of it." And it's like, "What?" Like
so what's this part?
Well,
yeah.
There's
yeah.
a lot of cutting corners in the movie. Like this is such a dumb thing that I like point out. It's like, okay, don't use the catapult. Oh, we'll just use... He's like, we could do this. We'll make this much easier. He got a pulley up there? How the hell did he get the pulley
on
the top?
How did he get the pulley
up
there?
Yeah.
Was it there the whole time?
Yeah. And how
don't
did,
worry
they,
about
how did
it.
They thread it? Like, it's just like stuff like that where you're just kind of like,
yeah.
okay, let it go. Like, it just... There's a lot of cut corners. And so for every moment that I was like, this is working... There's a simultaneous moment of like, ugh,
yeah, yeah.
like that was bad.
But if they'd chosen to go full comedy, then the fact that they didn't do something and then the next thing also didn't make sense would just be funny.
Yeah.
yeah.
But since it wasn't full comedy, you weren't, I couldn't
you
tell
you
if that
sure.
was, yeah, a joke or like not continuity or like
yeah.
bad writing or. Yeah.
Like even Cavaldi, you're like, am I supposed to fear him? Actually, a lot of the stuff that's cut out is actually more of him being like threatening, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
So they went a more comedy direction with him, which
yeah.
is weird.
Yeah. So it's like they left in all the silly stuff, but they cut out the parts where he's like, "Hey, stop fucking around, or I'll kill you."
Hmm. yeah, because he wasn't threatening at all. He was just like a giant
goofball.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're right though, Sequoia, that like there nowhere in there did they set up that they needed to break the mirror to break the spell, or that the mirror was in any way related to the spell.
Oh,
like,
and Matt Damon has got a fantastic arm and just like
oh that
to,
rock,
to throw
through
the rock.
The
window.
Rock
through the window
yeah.
like they
yeah.
hit the mirror.
That was wild.
Again,
that
that's
like,
one of those things where it's just like edit, you're just
yeah.
like and the rock goes through the window, whatever, yeah, move on.
Because he like threw it just on accident, or like,
no,
I don't
he just casually just goes, just tosses it, and then it just perfectly went through the window and hit perfectly.
Yeah,
into
no,
the
like,
mirror.
I just reject that kind of coincidence, like,
yeah.
flat out reject
yeah.
it. That
That's
was
some, like,
terrible.
X-Men mutant level accuracy, right there.
yeah. I overall, I would say not worth it, but it has its moments. I don't think if you watch it, you're gonna feel wasted my time, but I think there are things to enjoy. It.
Yeah, you'll
yeah.
come away from that, be like. Yeah, I watched a movie.
Yeah, yeah I did a thing.
It was a slip and slide of emotions.
Yep. A mud slide.
A mud slide of of emotion.
Well, Sequoia, thank you again for joining us for the spooky season.
Don't look at me.
Yeah.
I'm okay with it being called spooky season.
By proxy, fuck you, Clint.
Yeah, I mean, I love, you know, being summoned and or resurrected each year, however we want to put that.
Right. What our audience cannot see is that we have here drawn board on the table is like, yeah, a Ouija board with like a pentagram and candles lit up. And we're just like, oh, Sequoia, come
she's just,
to
she's
our
just
room.
In front of us like a forest ghost. With a mic.
Yep.
Yeah. I project really well for a ghost. I'll say. But yeah, I mean, it's always really fun to come back, and you know, I can't wait to see where we go next time. Is it okay. Down from here? Yeah. Is it up from here? Who knows?
I mean, I would argue that Brothers Grimm was better than The Invasion.
I would not.
Interesting. Well, Sequoia, where can people find you?
Yes, so I have two podcasts you can find me at. One is called Fanatical Fix and Where to Find Them, where we read old Harry Potter fan fiction that is wild and crazy and wild. And then the other is But Make It Scary, which Ray has done several times. And we take a romance movie and we rewrite it as a horror film. And it is a dark comedy and it's a lot of fun.
It's so fun.
You can find those both wherever pods are cast, and you can find me on Instagram and TikTok at Sequoia Simone.
Thank you, Sequoia.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. So we did not know that Spotify comments even existed until recently when I went in there and found out that they exist.
Yeah, we've been asking for you guys to give us comments. And,
like all these people on Spotify have been like going in there and
being so kind and nice, and we had no idea.
No idea. So anyway, if you've been leaving us Spotify comments, thank you. I know you exist now. So I've been going through and reading those and publishing them. So here are a couple from the last Barbie episode. Amber said, I love this podcast. These three are magic together. The Barbie episode is one of my favorites.
Aww.
After we recorded that, me and Jenny were like, well, that was
okay,
an okay
I guess
episode.
That one's
that was
fine. We have like then, no concept of
See, you guys are enjoying.
I come away from every episode like, God damn, we're good at this podcast. Like we're pretty funny.
No,
have a naturally optimistic outlook, and we're just like that was garbage.
Yeah. I was sitting there going like, oh, that was so serious and boring, and like, and we just weren't really on top of it. And then like when we were editing it, I came around more to it, but I didn't think anybody would.
Yeah.
Say that's her favorite.
Oh. Well, Amber says it's her favorite, so that's great.
I think she's saying the Barbie movie is her favorite. Not necessarily.
No, she said the Barbie episode
Barbie
is one of
episode.
My favorites.
Okay.
Come on. Okay. And then Daniel said, I found the link for the secret episode you mentioned at the end. I keep clicking it, but it's not working. Am I doing something wrong? What should I be doing with the link? Do you remember what he's referencing?
Oh, was it a link to my underwear?
No. We were talking about the clit.
Clit's closet?
Yeah, Clit's closet.
Yeah, there's no real
And
link.
Ian's like, I'm going to hide it, and then no one will be able to find it. Well, Daniel found it. He just doesn't know what to do with it.
Oh. I mean, Google exists too, right?
Yeah. Or just, Google it. Okay, so these next two are from YouTube. Fran says, Barbie the character being a blank slate to be projected on is honestly the quintessential Barbie trait. Everything about that doll is designed for children to project themselves upon and have them act out whatever fantasies of adult life they want. So it makes perfect sense for that to carry over in the movie.
Yeah. So
that's a good point.
Yeah. I pinned that comment. I was like, oh, yeah, okay, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there is obviously a difference between a toy and a movie, but I felt like they did a really good job of kind of making her that like blank slate character for you to project yourself onto, but then also making it about her finding herself as a character.
As her own. Yeah.
And then George said, if I had a nickel for every WB female-led and directed film that was featured on the show where Clint shows his thong / penis in the first 5 minutes, I will have two.
I was thinking about that too, and I was like, yeah, I have the Wonder Woman underwear and I have the Barbie underwear.
Yeah.
But I just want to make it very clear. Never once has Ian and Jenny Ray actually seen my penis.
He just I mean, he wants you guys to think that.
I just want to make that very clear. No,
just the undies.
But you guys can hear it on Patreon.
No, but I texted you after and I was just like, do you have Wonder Woman undies too? And you were like, yeah. And I'm like, oh, okay, that makes sense. Because I completely forgot.
What are the coincidence that we were the only two movies that we've covered that were directed by women and
have female
and
leads.
Then you had to show off your ass.
You had to put your manness all over it, whipping your dick out and around.
I mean,
to be fair, it doesn't whip that far.
Hold, brother. I don't want to say anything incriminating. Let's just move on.
Moving on. All right. LXG. Langley says, ironically, you guys put more thought into how to make Tom Sawyer work than anyone making this film. LOL.
That's right. Yes, the whole bit was like, I don't really know. You shoot so much better than me. That's true.
So yeah, if you want us to read one of your comments on the show, go leave us a comment. You can do that on Spotify, you can do it on YouTube, you can do it on Instagram. We'll try to pick a smattering from all the different platforms and read them out loud.
Yeah.
Man, we're good at stingers.
I totally didn't repeat that from this Justin, 3 minutes ago.
This Justin got the trades and we have some new meddling executives that we need to gossip about. Uh-huh. So,
but not like the previous ones we talked about in this episode, those pieces of shit. These ones are cool.
These are the good kind of meddling executives. No scandal to be noted here, unless it's like a minor funny scandal.
Yeah.
I guess we'll find out.
Like they accidentally kicked a duck or something.
Yeah. speaking of minor scandals, what's the deal with Judson G?
Judson, with him? What I love about Judson is he makes every episode a scavenger hunt. Mm-hmm. So he puts down little clues for us to find all the equipment. We have to go find all of our equipment and put it back together. It makes it, you know, kind of a fun little thing.
Yeah.
He's like the Riddler, like a supervillain of this podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he but just slightly, was... just like, not like, like evil things, just slightly like, keeping us on our feet.
Yeah. He, in fact, was actually the one who put that weird post-it note
inside. Yeah, the post-it note in Grimm. Yeah.
Oh my God.
I don't know what it is, and I don't know how he wrote it in my handwriting.
What, Judson, what does it mean? It literally just says New Orleans, which it's all underlined with a lot of Sharpie, and then it has North degrees plus West degrees. But like no specific longitudinal, latitudinal. So like I don't know where in New Orleans we're supposed to go, Judson.
Yeah, is that on a globe? Is that actually there? Like, I don't know. See, this is Judson keeping us on our feet. We don't know.
He's a goddamn genius.
Judson.
Our next one is Mr. Alexander S. And he is known for having the world's largest mud pit.
He's the owner of Slip Slide
Mud Slide.
That's what happened to that's what the Brothers Grimm set turned into.
Oh my
he
God.
Turned it into the
he bought
the set.
And he simultaneously runs it as a spa, but also serves mudslides.
You know, that's really hitting all of like the key demographics, right? Like parents can go enjoy a mudslide, have a mud spa day, and then the kids are slip sliding around in the Disneyland set.
Yeah.
He just basically bought that hilltop in Prague outside of Prague.
Yep.
And was just like, this is a theme park now.
Yep. Making bank and sending us some of that mud scratch.
This is you missed opportunity. It's mud money.
So
it's
mud money.
Yeah, not mud money.
Mud money. Is wrestling allowed?
That's after hours.
Yeah, that's
after
like,
too many mudslides.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a natural progression of the day. So it's like the kids come in the day in the morning. You know, they have their fun slides. The parents kind of wind down with a mud. A mud bath, and they get some, drink some mud pies, eat some mud pies, drink some mudslides, and then it's mud wrestling.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like family friendly in the day, then it's like after dark, like adult time.
Yeah.
I'm just realizing now there are a lot of mud related activities for all ages. Really.
Right, yeah. Who
this
knew
was
mud was for
really
everybody?
This was a really smart investment that Mr. Alexander S. made.
Do you just get to fight anybody And you get to go home with that person? What? it's like a key bowl party in a mud bowl.
Yeah, a mud bowl. You pull out a muddy key. It's like, all right, who's this?
I guess that's true. Like, is the entertainment more based around like professional people who work at this theme park? Or is it sort of like an open mic night where you're just like, yeah, sure, I'll get in there and try some mud wrestling?
That's like karaoke. You know, you sign somebody up and then, yeah. You know.
Someone signs you up for a karaoke. You're like, oh, it's so embarrassing.
Someone signs you up for... topless one, too. God.
You signed me up for topless mud wrestling again.
Oh, you, Alexander.
Oh, you. Anyway, very smart investment. Lots of money in the mud market. We're getting some of that mud money. Mad mud money.
Mad mud money.
So thank you, Mr. Alexander S. Brian D. Brian D's Nuts, the owner of the D's Nuts fortune.
Yeah, he's raking in those peanut pennies.
Excellent.
You thought the Planters peanut guy was rich? No, it's Brian D. D's Nuts. He's got he's got peanuts, cashews, walnuts. Like he's all into those legumes and nuts. Yeah. And
them nuts.
And he coined the phrase D's nuts. So anytime you see it on a t-shirt or coffee mug, yeah, he gets a bit of that.
He gets like a penny.
What did you say? Peanut pennies?
Peanut pennies. Yeah. He gets penny peanuts. Mm-hmm. Peanut pennies. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like there's like the phrase like, I'm working for peanuts. Like, you know, so it was such like a derogatory thing. Like, oh, I can't believe I'm working for peanuts. Like, but now it's like he's trying to turn that around. It's like, hey, he's also one of the greatest employers in the world. And I was like, I'm working for peanuts.
Yeah. He's literally working for peanuts, which is great.
Yeah.
Except for the people who are allergic.
Yeah, he's working on some top scientists working on like peanut flavored, you know, like instead of like the Impossible Burger where it's all plant based, these are like
Impossible Nuts.
Impossible Nuts.
Impossible Peanuts?
Yeah, that's what he's got his top scientists.
More like Probable Peanuts.
Probable Peanuts. Peanuts? Probably.
Probably.
That's, you know what? He's saving lives in the world with D's Nuts.
Yeah.
And finally, we can have peanut butter. On an airplane.
On an airplane.
Yep.
Without risk of
killing
death.
Someone.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Love it.
That's the whole point of this whole new airline.
It's just nuts. All peanut butter based.
Yeah. Nuts air.
Nuts air. But with a Z.
Exactly. Thanks for those peanut pennies, Brian D.
I mean, we utilize those planes all the time so we can find all our goddamn equipment in New Orleans.
In New Orleans. We're going to post this post-it note and then the patrons can weigh in on what they think, what the fuck they held. Yeah. They think this means. All right, and this last person is I have to say this last name because it's fertile ground for improvising. David Bucko.
Yeah,
and he runs any theme park that involves westerns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but also the person who coined that, like, what do you think you're doing, Bucko? Yeah. Like he gets money. He gets royalties Bucko.
How are our meddling executives coining words and getting money for it? This is
how do we do it?
This is why they're executives. Like this, they're the people who are just like,
they
listen,
figure it out.
My last name's Bucko. That's fucking rad. I'm gonna sell that to Clint Eastwood. It's gonna be in all the westerns.
All those famous Clint Eastwood lines.
I'm gonna Bucko. I don't know, whatever. Whoever says that.
Go ahead, punk, make my day, and Bucko.
Like, what are you doing over there, Bucko? Like, you know, those famous Clint Eastwood lines. Like, look, he's getting money.
But people flock to his western theme parks just to hear someone say that phrase to them.
Yeah.
You know, like they walk.
It's like everybody, it's like when someone says that word, everybody just fucking cheers.
Yeah, they just go nuts. For D's Nuts, which is being sold at Bucko's theme
parks. Theme park, which is adjacent to the Mudslide theme park.
Yes, like, yeah. They're collaborating.
Our meddling executives are so collaborative.
The western town is above the Mudslide like theme park because you can just slide down into it.
Yep.
So once you're done shooting people.
Western style.
Western style and calling them Bucko and what, you know, Westworld style. You just slide down into the mud wrestling pit.
Mm-hmm.
It is a Westworld style western theme park, but just all the characters are Clint Eastwoods, like Clint Eastwood from different Western films walking around calling you bucko.
Well, yeah. See, and there's a collaboration between Brian D and Alexander S to do a peanut butter mudslide. Like you slide. It's like a water slide, but with peanut butter.
But hypoallergenic.
Yes. Hypoallergenic. Yes. Yeah. Well, so you're Brian. not just like if you're allergic to peanuts, just swimming in peanut butter. Immediate death. No.
Yeah. So anyway, anytime someone says bucko, he gets a little bit of scratch and we get a little bit of scratch. Yep. So
those bucko bucks.
Bucko bucks. Oh my God. That's absolutely the currency at
Bucko Ranch.
At David Bucko's Buck Wild.
Buck Ranch.
Buck and Ranch.
Got some bucko bucks.
Bucko bucks. All right. Well, thank you to all of our new meddling executives, our new patrons. If you would like to be a patron and have us tell flattering lies about you, you can go to patreon.com/itwasashitshow, shit without the I, and you can find us there. And you'll get access to our director's cuts of every episode, any DVD extras that we record, which are bonus episodes. And
We just did one.
That,
with Sequoia.
Yeah, that you'll hear coming up. And then Clint's Closet, you get a sneak peek into Clint's Closet.
Mm-hmm.
Some shitty movie night recommendations and other fun stuff. So yeah, head on over there and check it out.
Not Clint's Closet.
Not Clint's Closet. No. No one wants to look into that.
Nope.
Nobody can find it.
Thank you so much for listening. It Was a Shit Show is researched and produced by me, Ian Jench. Sound editing and mix by Ray Reynolds. Our theme music is by Ryan K. Hudson. Wardrobe provided by Clint's Closet. If you're enjoying the show, you can support us on Patreon or help spread the word by leaving a review and forcing your friends and family to listen. And if you have a shit show suggestion, find us on social media at It Was a Shit Show, but shit without the I. You can also find all these episodes on our YouTube channel.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.